sexy, spooky bones.
Welcome to the Skeleton Boys, the horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny, and I'm ready for this ride.
I want to preface this by saying I am sick, so if I sound weird, I apologize. So.
And I just did a 180 off a vert pipe, so I'm sick too.
What a ride. And welcome to the show. This week we are reviewing VHS 85. As always, John will give us the plot in 5 words, give our first thoughts. We go into a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner. We're watching The Fall of House of Usher.
Just kidding. We're back Yellow Jackets.
Yes. From, we're watching From, and what is the other? Chapel 8.
Well, no, we don't ever have to mention that one again, actually.
Is that coming back, right?
Is that confirmed?
Got mad. No, we are starting a new series, anthology series, Blood Ride.
That's the ride I was waiting for. Our Blood Ride.
Season 1, Episode 1. I thought for the longest time it was Blood Rush. So I was looking at no success on Netflix. No. But I did stumble upon it eventually. Did not know. Oh, I did know it was I knew it was in another language, but I didn't know it was Norwegian?
Sure.
Is that where we landed all the language?
I'm not, you know, I couldn't tell you. Definitely American actors dubbed the version we watched. Not sure what type of Americans did the subtitles.
Yeah.
Well, which did not match the dubbing.
So here's the most annoying thing Netflix does. They put everything.
They undercut their employees. No, I'm just kidding.
Well. The second annoying thing they do is they assume you want the dubbed version, which is always the worst version.
Yeah.
Anytime there's an option to watch it in its original language with subtitles, even though the translations is not going to be the best sometimes or as nuanced, it's still better to hear the dialogue spoken in the original language and then kind of piece together with the subtitles. That's always been the preference, but for whatever reason Netflix defaults to the stupid American version, dub version.
Yeah. Wait, oh hey, are you American? I'm like, what do you mean by that? No, yeah. We're not in Canada, sorry to disappoint everybody.
So you, but do you really have to town, like
nobody's heard of
yeah Canada vagina, yeah, what is it? Yeah,
Skeleton Boys podcast out of a little known area of the United States.
Yeah, not
one of the smallest states.
Smallest states, undensely populated. Yeah, the opposite of it.
Yeah. No fruit fly problems that were so dramatic that the city introduced more fruit flies to get rid of. True story. True story. People that are listening.
But yeah, if anybody's wants to dig in the settings, you have to match it to its original language, in this case Norwegian, and then put the English subtitles, which is in there. It's hard to find, but they're in there. Please do change it. Did you watch it in the, I'm assuming you watched it in the terrible dub version?
Yeah, it was too funny. It was like, once I realized that the dub was not matching the subtitles at all, I was like, this is kind of funny. I'm going to keep it.
Yeah.
So do you think we're in for a treat if we continue to do this? Because this came out in March 2020, the very beginning of the panic of the pandemic.
This, yeah.
So I wonder if it got canceled because it was just like, oh, we just can't shoot anymore?
Or because of the quality of the show?
Yeah, because I was thinking, well, that was a prime time for shows to get released because everybody's just stuck at home. If you were responsible. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, it's hard to say if that's why it got released. It could have just already been planned to have been released. Is there only one season of this?
As far as I can tell, yes.
I thought there was like four. Am I crazy? I am crazy, in yes.
What context, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's only one
season. I feel like I'm gonna blame just like, you know, everything shut down during the pandemic.
Right.
Yeah.
So with that said, I'm assuming not a fan. You weren't up for the ride, the blood ride.
No, I didn't mind it. We were briefly talking about it. I had forgotten that I was watching an anthology series again for some reason.
Yeah.
Even though we talked about it ad nauseum. And I was like, wow, they're like really just getting into it. Like, maybe this is going to be too fast. Like, what are the next episodes going to be about? Oh, completely different stories. That's right. Because all these people are on for the blood ride.
So, yeah. So the title sequence is odd looking bus driver that has no passengers until he takes off. And then quickly the bus is filled with
the guy,
the passengers, the, quote the unquote.
Squirmy, wormy guys from, yeah.
Yeah. And is insinuating that these are the passengers are the ones telling the tales, the blood ride tales, if you will. I think I will read the IMDb description of this episode, since they're all different, right? Says city dweller Molly has, her name was Molly, wow, has difficult adjusting to a new downsized life in the country until she learns why her neighbors are so attached to their pets. So right off the bat I was like,
did you catch that she was from the city and wasn't gonna adjust to country life? Were you aware that that's how she felt? By her dialogue saying every 2 seconds that she's a city girl and
my name is Molly. I'm a city dweller. Difficult.
I'm having difficulty so attached to their pets. Yeah. That is actually almost the dialogue.
That is almost pretty good description of everything that was said in the first 10
you
minutes.
You
of
didn't
episode.
See them? They were weird with the pets. And I was like, I didn't catch that, but okay. Like, I just thought it was funny. The daughter, who I'm assuming was born in the city, right? Was all about like, whoa, big house, cool, the country, whatever. And then I kept forgetting that she was supposed to be the wife because she was acting like a bratty child. Like the eldest child was like, oh, my friends are in the city.
Oh, yeah.
But what about her friends? They're in the city. They're not going to come out here and see you.
That's right, yeah.
I don't know anybody at this high school.
So, yeah, so Molly doesn't want to move to the country. But they insinuate
a lot of peaches.
Yeah, they insinuate that that they've, you know, basically they're moving out there because they're broke. You can't live in the city. And I guess she's used to more of like a luxurious lifestyle or city life. So
yeah. What was the implication that it was kind of her fault that they were broke too, right?
She took a bad loan with a lot of
interest.
Yeah. That's the real horror when you're an adult.
Yeah,
the
loan,
the interest.
She got suckered in by those letters from Opportune or whatever. Did you ever get those?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's your bank telling you, congratulations, you qualify for more debt. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I thought this was actually pretty good. First off, I'll say, once I saw the pets, I was like, oh no, we're gonna kill animals. This is gonna be rough to sit through.
I thought, I mean, I didn't catch that right away. I thought I was still trying to connect the dots, I think, with the Blood Red intro.
You know? Just 15 minutes in, what was that intro? What the fuck is going on?
We see that lady, right? We see Molly's character, which, again, I'm with you. I didn't know her name until I read the description. Is like on the bus and looking confused because she's on a bus in the middle of the night.
With blood, she's looking, she has blood in her hands. She's looking at them, you know.
So my immediate assumption was, oh, like vampires. And then I thought,
during the day?
That's why I thought those people were like taking care of the vampires. And that's why they were so curious about the new people coming in.
Oh, okay.
I thought
there
was going to be like a Dracula type person in the basement of this house that nobody wants to live in.
Okay. Yeah.
Because there's a lot of emphasis on the house, like, oh, nobody's lived here for a long time. Oh, we're so interested in you.
Yeah, that's right.
And the house has nothing to do with anything.
They chose not to follow up on it, but I guess knowing why it was abandoned, that seemed like that was the whole thing, at least in the beginning, that the premise was leading to what's in the house or something. Something's wrong with the house, right? Is that kind of what you mean?
That's what I thought, yeah. So again, I thought it was going to be like a Fright Night inspired thing, and there was like a vampire in the basement or whatever.
Yeah. So anytime I see people like this, elderly couple, and they're like smiling and look, they're on vacation, dressed like they're on vacation. I just assume
they're gonna get midsummered.
Yes, that's exactly what I was gonna say. Midsummer. Here we go. Let's breathe together, guys. So it's really first thing I thought. But I knew something was up with that. So. What did you think of the reveal of the plot device of this?
I didn't catch what was going to happen at the end. I thought it was going to play out a little differently.
Yeah. Yep. Hated the ending. Go ahead.
You hated the ending?
Too many twists. They could have. I don't know. Like they try too hard to spin it in a least like to overly surprise you. Like they turned it too many times. You know what I mean? Like
to not be predictable.
Right. Yeah.
Because I just assumed that she was going to kill everybody and realize she had nothing left or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
How does this end? She stumbles upon these old ladies killing their pets on this Viking stone.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Vikings are known for their mysticism and witchcraft and sorcery.
Yes.
That's classic Vikings.
Go on, yeah.
Maybe in Norway, I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no clue.
Let's not be biased, Thor, John.
Classic Thor thing to do is kill animals on a big slab of rock. A very special big slab of rock. Apparently if they wish for something and kill their pets, they get their wish sort of granted. She realizes she has to have a connection with whatever she kills because she tries to kill a rat that she found in the basement that hangs out in the same exact spot on days on end. Because she's the first person to go down in the basement. Which I thought was funny too. It's just like, oh, yep. City girl, I hate this. And then she's the first person to go down in the basement for what reason? But she does. And there's a rat there. And then when she talks to these old ladies that are killing this thing, like a day or two later, she goes back and sees the rat's in the same spot, grabs it, kills it, gets the equivalent of $5 or something. I don't know.
5,624 krons, whatever that equates to. I don't know the conversion. So,
they made it seem like it was very little money.
Very little money.
Yeah.
She didn't much care. I guess like one thing to it's when there's whatever they're sacrificing is it's they get money back in return. Like or right, that's kind of the idea. They get money. It's all money based, right?
I'm not sure. I didn't quite understand. I didn't follow that. I thought maybe that's just what she wanted. Because she hated being broke.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. Like, yeah, that was the sort of solution to Molly's issues, was that she wanted, they clearly needed a sizable amount of money so they could go move back to the city. And so when this came up, she mainly thought to use it for like the lottery. But even the women who tell her about this sacrifice stone, they basically say like the person that did it won a bunch of money. So it seems like I just assumed that it's kind of like whatever you sacrifice you love, you get like money in return.
Or so, some sort of wealth. Cause the Vikings, I don't think they had a monetary system from what I've learned.
Crones? It's more of like
just taking, you know, just taking what they want.
I guess we can talk about the ending of this.
So Molly, she kills a rat, and then she kills a family dog because she's like, yeah, it's our family dog, but she doesn't actually give a shit about the dog.
Right, yeah.
So she only gets like 300,000 whatever more money is.
Kroners. Yeah.
And then she has the grand idea to kill her husband.
Yeah, who she hasn't particularly gotten. I guess it's justified because in her eyes, because it's like, I haven't been getting along with him and he's making me live out here, so I'm going to kill him and take myself and my daughter out of this situation.
Because the implication is city people or like her high society, high maintenance type of person doesn't give a shit about anything but herself.
You get the sense that she's shallow, that, you know, that the women who, again, like the women who tell her stuff, like just like don't be greedy about what it is you're going to do because it can bite you, you know. It could bite you in the ass, I guess. And
yeah, they kind of say something like, hey, well, just be careful with that. Well, even the lady that she's getting the scratch off and the lottery ticket from, that lady's like, hey, you got to be real careful with, you know, with this stuff. It's dangerous because one second you're trying to get money and then next second your daughter kills you by accident.
So. Yeah. Was it by accident? Bum, bum, bum.
I mean, the dad survives, right? That's what I gathered.
The dad survived, yeah. So I guess Molly leads the husband out there and they get into a fight. She tries to explain. I think she tries to kill him but doesn't. But I guess the daughter followed them and she ends up killing the mother on the stone.
She's the only the character that I noticed didn't have like an Americanized name for the translation.
Yeah, that's true. It's revealed that I guess she's a little older. She is some millionaire now.
Has so much money. And she has a pet with her, right?
At the end. Yeah, a cat. So clearly she's still using... she's still using the stone, and the interviewer, the person there, the interviewer, says that your dad died the second year. Your mom died that year. You made your first million. Your dad died the second. So clearly she's...
I wonder if I... Would you be able to do that?
Kill my family members for money? Nah, probably not.
Wow, that took you way too long to answer that. No, but what if it just has to be something you love, right? Because, like, what if I'm like, man, I like really, really love
peaches.
Nerd. Politicians.
Yeah.
Except for Bernie Sanders. That guy, fuck that guy. But I love all the other politicians.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Carter, too. No, that guy sucks. And he's. I don't see him surviving another year, but
yeah,
I'm going off on a tangent, but I did see a video of him. I didn't know his wife passed away recently.
Yes, they recently had the funeral. Yeah,
and he came out for the funeral. They had to like wheelchair him out, and he didn't really look like he was there. You know, is insane because I feel like we've known him to be the guy that's like been building houses well into his like mid-90s.
I think he, well, yeah, some stuff I've seen over the years of him just doing small work, you know, like hammering something.
Still work. Working. I don't even want to do at work.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Sounds like too labor intensive for me.
But yeah. So Molly does not get her wish because she bit off more of the monkey's paw than she could chew. I don't know. And went on her blood ride.
Yeah, it's like one of the few things that's missing a really memorable main title music stuff.
Like I was telling you earlier, I saw this really shitty, like, so back in college and then here when I moved here, probably like the first 5 years, I used to go to like rental stores and just rent like whatever was in the horror section to find, I don't know, most of the time it's all shit. But you know, once in a while, like that's how I watched Session 9.
Oh yeah.
Was a random pick.
Same here when it came out.
But there was a movie called Madhouse that was really bad, but the song was so memorable because it was so fucking cheesy. It was just this like rock band going like, "It's a madhouse, it's a madhouse." I feel like Blood Red could have the same exact thing.
It's a blood ride.
It's a blood ride. And then the subtitles would say something completely different.
Yeah. So you're looking for like some like Norwegian death metal band or something. Like
yeah.
The Blood Ride theme. Good stuff so far. Not a bad opening story.
I think we're watchable. Both on the same page about it being a quick 30 minutes, which is ideal.
Oh, that's the yeah, that's the selling point there. The 30 minutes. Oh yeah, nice bite-sized tales. So, and I thought that it was good. It was actually good too. It's not just the fact that it was short. It's actually a pretty good story.
And it looks like the guy that directed this directed Headhunters, which I heard good things about.
Which one's Headhunters?
Directed a season of Lilyhammer.
Okay.
And he did something for Buzz Aldrin, sort of biopic, I guess.
Okay.
Yep. And that's that.
That's that.
And then some other names I can't pronounce.
Yep. cool. So I guess I think I saw that it runs for 6 episodes, so we'll guess we'll continue for now.
We'll continue on the blood ride. Dun, 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 dun. cool, yeah. Well, that was a quick little review.
Well, yeah.
It also helps that we've just been like stuck on programming that's been like an hour long, so there's just so much to talk about. I'm like, oh man.
Yeah,
this one, hey, she kills a couple of critters and then she tries to kill her main squeeze.
Yeah, bada bing, bada boom, we're out. 30 minutes.
Hey, people die, people live. I don't know. I like it.
Alrighty, let's move over.
Is there like a name for, you know, what was it? Slacks, right? Was about fast fashion. Is there like a equivalent to fast horror? Like, yeah, just in it.
Yeah, right. It's Blood Ride. It's the Blood Ride, as we call it. Alrighty, let's move over to our main review of VHS 85. John, do you want to give us the plot?
/H/S/85.
Yes. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For V/H/S/85. Coming in at number 3. Movie claims our birth era.
Some of us.
You were what, like 2?
I was one. Thank you.
Do you remember any of that?
I remember all of this.
Coming in at number 2 for V /H/S/85. 1985 cameras, insane battery life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a commercial for the best VHS cameras that recorded for more than 15 minutes before you had to recharge them.
Yeah.
Except for the one, I do have a qualm about one of them. They use a Betamax thing. I'm like, that's not VHS. There's a whole thing about Betamax not being VHS.
Wait, which one?
It is the second half of one of the stories.
Well, remember that they say that they're using VHS, that they wanted Betamax because it looked better, but they bought a cheaper one.
Probably missed that
so,
one.
Okay. VHS. VHS.
Which, being quite honest, none of these look like they're shot on VHS.
No,
and coming in at number 1 for V /H/S/85. Sex tapes from Eli Roth.
Yeah, he wished. He wished he was this creative. Alrighty, John, what are your first thoughts?
So I have seen, I don't think I've seen all of the VHSs, but I've seen a good majority of them. I'm probably only missing like one of them.
Okay.
It's kind of on par with the first two a little bit. I would say kind of like the first two, you get different directors, you get different stories. Some stories are going to be much stronger than the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Some are pretty disappointing. But all in all, I mean, it's not, I didn't think it was a bad movie at all. You know, it's fun, quick. Even though it's like close to 2 hours long, like each of the segments is like digestible.
Right, right. And they do, and the, since they do break up the segments, there's two segments that kind of start and then they end. And they don't end, but they continue later in the movie.
So. Yes, yeah.
So you're okay with it?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind this one at all, because like a couple of the stories I really enjoyed, like a lot. I was like, oh damn, that's fun. I like that. It's cool.
Yeah. I just want to preface by saying, like, I've never seen any of these movies. So
you've never seen any of the V/H/S/
movies? Any of them. So because the original VHS came out and I was not watching movies at the time. So I was on sabbatical from movies. I was only reading comics. Yeah. And that was, so this movie came out at that time. I was not watching much of anything. So I haven't seen, I think this is what, like the fifth or sixth entry? Because there's what, like VHS, VHS 2, VHS Viral, VHS 94, VHS 99, and then 85? Six? This is the sixth one, I believe.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, I'd believe it. So I've seen VHS, VHS 2. I think I saw 94. And that one, yeah, I did see 94. That one was fucking terrible. And I did see 99. That one was also pretty bad. I never saw Viral. And it looks like there's a VHS 23 coming out soon.
Yeah, so one of the selling points, I mean, and we've talked before, and I think you've always said you were kind of like mixed to, you didn't really enjoy these movies, so I never had an inkling to watch them. So
I think I told you the first two, they have some really great stories, but like, I feel like a curse of a bunch of these movies is like the last story is usually like bad. But the first one, I think the last story was actually pretty fucking fun.
Right.
I think, yeah.
And the other selling point for 85 was that Scott Derrickson, C. Robert Cargill, creators of Black Phone, were making a segment. So that being I believe yours and mine favorite movie of 2022. So
I think so. Yeah, yeah, Black Phone. That and also I'm a fan of Gigi Guerrero because I just follow her on social media. I think we have a friend that did something for her too.
Oh. Yeah. And So going into it, never seen any of the segments, and I would have to walk away with being, it was okay. I'm mixed, I think, because it's kind of like, it just depends on whether you like the segments or not. Whatever five segments they've, you know, tales they've picked for the short, you're kind of beholden to them. And what's kind of great about anthologies is once, if you don't like one, there's probably another one going to start in 15, 20 minutes. So it's just got to hang on to whatever the next thing is. And for the most part, I think I liked most of them. I don't think there's any I actively disliked. I did find a couple boring.
You told me that I was going to be surprised by your favorite segment. I'm assuming it's the one that What's-Her-Face from Lucky did, huh?
Yeah. That's my guess. Yes, it was. Yes.
Which and I made a joke about it because I was like, I'm pretty sure that's what he liked.
Pre-recording, yes, I did ask John the question. What he thought my favorite one was, and of course he nailed it. It was Natasha's segment, and she did, of course, Lucky, which I think I enjoyed, and you were a little more mixed on.
Yeah,
I was so I actually enjoyed her segment. I actually feel like it's kind of like they're shooting a play, and then there's something that happens going on in the play, and I thought the simplicity of it, the believability of it, was much more practical and simple. And the story is incredibly simple, but I think effective the way it was, you know, delivered. And it kind of makes sense. The segment makes sense for this type of format. So, which is why I liked it the most, because I thought it was the most plausible, believable one. And out of really all of them, because I had issues with generally all of them because of the believability of it. Has that Cloverfield problem, right? The first movie where why are they running with the camera when their life's in danger? Or, you know, and they try to explain away, everybody has different explanations as to why they continue to record whatever, you know, record what the craziness is going on.
I want to say it didn't make much sense when they were recording the one that Gigi Guerrero did, but I think
that was the most egregious one. Yeah, for me.
I was going to say, I think they write it off like, well, they're a news station, that guy's alive. And then they eventually keep recording just because they need the light.
Okay. Yeah. That does make that. I didn't catch them saying that explicitly, but yeah, that does make sense. So,
well, I don't think they explain it. I was just like, I realized that the only light source towards the end was really the camera.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause there's like a little thing at the end of the segment.
I like that one. I did like that one. I would put that one and the TK No God or whatever it's called probably as my second favorites. And then my first favorite was the Scott Derrickson one. I really enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah, the Scott Derrickson one was also really good, but my complaint is almost the opposite of how I feel about the other one. This one felt too well directed. It was like way too many nice shot compositions and stuff.
It did kind of feel like this was going to be the last story too, right?
Yeah.
It just felt so theatrical.
Exactly. Yeah, he can't help it. I mean, he just wants to put the camera in different places and have cuts and stuff like that. So it's just a matter of believability, even though it's like well shot, well acted and everything. It's just like, oh man, this is like a really good director. So you kind of sense it. The one I least liked, the boring one, was the total copy.
Which is kind of a bummer because I think we both like that director.
We liked The Night House. We didn't much care for Hellraiser, the remake he did.
That was you though.
I did
enjoy it.
I didn't. I thought it was a little. I was expecting a little more from it, and I would argue I was expecting a little more from this too.
It just seemed a little too. we've seen this story before. I don't know. Like there
it's
was
a little,
nothing,
yeah, yeah.
Like at this point, it's repetitive from things that have already been done. I know a lot of stories are repeats anyway, but like this was nothing original, unfortunately.
I had a hard time. Like, it feels like it has the most time out of all the segments for reasons, but that could be my imagination. But it feels like it's kind of brought up continuously throughout the piece.
It's supposed to be the wraparound story, I think. Mm-hmm. But the way they did it this time, I didn't really enjoy it. Because, like I said, the other VHSs are like people are finding tapes, at least like the first two. Because there's like people obsessed with these tapes and they all kind of connect with each other at the end, you realize, because it is the beginning of the end of the world is what the whole premise of the first two is. And people obsessing over these tapes are just trying to figure out the beginning of the end of the world happening.
Right.
So even though they seem like separate stories, it is just, it's hell's breaking loose.
So
and in this one, the whole documentary thing, I guess it's kind of there, but I think they were trying too hard to make it seem like, which is stuff we grew up with, right? You just record over stuff by accident.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, you see gore for like a quick second, right?
They've kind of dropped that premise. That.
Yeah.
Thing you're talking about. Like the idea that it's like they're looking for stuff on the tapes and stuff. And it's more just, like you said, somebody's watching all these videos that were recorded over each other or something, home movies.
And there was also I think I had a lot of issues with that, like the lady that leaves and she's the one being interviewed. I thought there was going to be a reveal there, like why introduce that at all, you know?
I guess she was the one who, yeah, she was the copy, but yeah, exactly. That was not,
no,
yeah, I had nothing to do with it.
In fact, like the ending, I understand, is supposed to be about consumerism or like, I don't know.
I feel like
nature.
It's a long joke to, yeah. It's just like a really long
really
setup.
Corny ending.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was probably my least favorite. I don't know. The two-parter was also underwhelming.
I found that one to be underwhelming.
Because the first part of it, I was like, that's pretty fucking cool. And then it just kind of went nowhere.
It's No Wake and second part is called Ambrosia. Yeah, wasn't this is the one that I was watching, and it opens the movie, and I was getting motion sickness. I don't think that's ever happened to me before. No. I'm also not feeling 100%, so like I think it attributed to it, so I don't want to just... But yeah, I was actually feeling like this is, must be what people talk about when they get motion sickness from movies, shaky cam movies. So,
I was going to say, I forgot it was supposed to be 1985 with that one.
Oh, yeah.
Until... I don't want to butcher his name, but the guy that plays Drew, Toussaint Morrison, comes out, like the ultra buff dude.
Mm-hmm.
What they did with his hair and stuff, I'm like, this guy looks ultra fucking 80s.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So how do we do this? What is? I think you suggested we just go through per segment because.
Okay.
Otherwise, we just say, hey, we're gonna get into spoilers because that's the only way to go through each of the stories since they're mini stories.
Yeah, you want to do that? Just do say spoilers and then we'll just talk about each one. Briefly?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, let's go to spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
Spoilers. Spoilers. It all takes place in 1985.
Twist. Just to continue, Total Copy really was kind of a... I guess it's about consumerism because it ends on the... They make an alien species look at... video, like they... Like look at TV.
Commercials and aerobic shows and... Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess the joke is that there's some aerobic video they kept thigh workout or something, right? So yeah. Then they...
But there's also this whole thing... What did they call it? Call it Toby or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Or am I? I'm thinking of fucking Paranormal Activity, I think. But
Fall of the House of Usher, Toby.
Yeah.
It's something like that. Yeah, you're close. They do call it something.
But I just, I guess that is the very final story because it's the wraparound story. Not like the best note to end on. I was like, oh man, I just was waiting for it to end, really.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. This thing like keeps suggesting that it's gonna turn into like a human, right? Like it keeps forming a thing that makes it look like it's gonna be a full body.
Right. Yeah.
And then it just turns into like a thing with a bunch of like long alien dicks or something.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Well, I mean, best described. That's how I would describe it.
And then like two people that it killed, it's forcing it to do the aerobic exercises that it saw on TV.
Yep. Yep.
Which I didn't quite understand why the alien would do that.
I think you kind of nailed it on the head. It's just like it's watching 80s TV, which is kind of like you said about consumerism, extravagance. That's when lifestyle of the rich and famous was a thing, and it's about money and stuff like that. So I think you're kind of like more or less right that that's all it knew. That's all it taught it. Nothing else.
I just didn't, I couldn't grasp why the alien did that. Why didn't it just like run away? You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah. No. I would say that's pretty boring. Yeah.
Yeah. First story we get is, oh shit, what's it called again?
No Wake,
yeah. A group of young adults, maybe teens or something. I'm not sure. I can't tell.
I'd say a little older. They got to drive, right? So college kids.
Well, the thing is, the second part of the story, there's like a main character and she's supposed to be 15. I'm like, what the fuck? She looks like serious? She's 30. Yeah. They mentioned it. I was like, what? It was like a whole rite of passage for her. That was the whole thing. Like, oh, she's 15 or 2016 or something.
You're talking about... Okay. Sorry. I thought you were talking about the people, the campers, but you're talking about the seven, right? Whoever's in the cult.
Yeah. But that's where I'm getting at. Like, well, I can't gauge anybody's age anymore because if this lady's supposed to be 15...
Wigs are not the best in this segment.
But it is true. There is some truth to people during this era. What's a good example? Well, it's not 80s, but let's say like 90s where Jason Alexander was supposed to be 30 years old, or he was actually 30 years old when he started Seinfeld and he looks fucking old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you stayed the same age, so don't come at me, Jason Alexander. You look great.
Yeah.
don't threat at us.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like they're go to a lake that they're not supposed to go to. I'm not sure how they found it. Probably just on a map, right?
Sure.
And they find a sign while they're going around, like deciding if they're going to go in the lake or not. And I forgot what it said. Lake, like, I thought it was going to say, like, Lake Evil or something, but I forgot what it said.
Yeah, it's something like that, yeah. No trespassing. They tear down no trespassing sign, and they go anyways.
Which I thought was going to be a nod to Creepshow 2, the thing where they go to the lake and there's that black blob.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That, like, eats the kids.
Yeah, that's what I kind of thought too. Something was in the water, possibly hillbilly people. That's kind of where I initially thought.
But not everybody goes into the water, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the people that go like jet skiing or whatever, everybody gets picked off by a shooter somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Which they did see the truck come in. And comedically, sort of, each of them gets like what, like one of the ladies gets horrifically like her jaw shot off.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about, the buff dude, gets his dick shot off.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's got like a penis in his hand, but like the inside of a penis or something. Yeah. And they're the only ones that went in the water, so they become zombies, question mark, but they're not. They feel alive is what they're saying.
Yeah, so they get while they're on the boat, we hear gunshots, rifle gunshots, and they're getting basically picked off. They're getting shot at. And so they all seemingly are shot in very gruesome, disgusting ways, and then supposedly all died, but they all awake, and they all come to the conclusion that they all were in the water, except for the couple
that didn't come
into the water. Yeah, didn't go into the water first.
What's his face? His sister
died with her boyfriend. Yeah, the guy who's holding the camera, who has just a crush on a girl, and it plays out so
awkwardly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. And the way that one ends is they see the people that didn't come back, and then for some reason, instead of being sad, they say they never felt more alive.
Mm.
And the revenge is gonna be, they're gonna do the same thing that person did to them, they're gonna do to whomever.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a weird, what does that mean? I don't understand.
Yeah, I thought they were going to go kill whoever killed them.
Keep them forever alive also. I didn't understand that, but,
that's the twist!
So, that's where that segment ends for the first part. Then it goes back to Ambrosia, which is the second part, where I think it's important to note, in Blood, there is 7 in Roman numerals inside of the camper. Yeah. And then we get introduced to this family, and there's a young, obviously a 15-year-old girl. Not somebody who's clearly much older.
There's a party for a family family party that they're videotaping.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And while she's recording with her camera and is bothering some the awkward person in the family, who I thought, before I realized this was the second part of the thing, I thought that guy was gonna be a killer or something.
Yeah.
Until you realize it's a cult or something of the 7, whatever the fuck that means. I guess they're big The Boys fans.
Yeah, well, it's a death cult, right? They're obsessed with death, I guess. That's or murdering people, I guess. Death cult, that's the same thing. But part of the thing is they mentioned that the ants, put poison in their brownies and ambrosia salad or something along those lines.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's they're obsessed with death or something, and it's tied around this idea of the 7. I guess you have to kill 7 people or something, or
I think so. I think that's what I gathered too. But there's that one aunt or whatever that apparently is really good with a sickle. So I was I want to see that. What is this? There is a mini scene where when she lets the weird family member carry the camera around.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They go outside, and there's a kid who's got a squirt gun and squirts her with it, with the water.
Right, yeah.
And then you see the camper from the beginning drive away. So I'm okay, this is the wraparound. And then that's when I gathered. I'm they filled it with the fucking water from the lake. Okay.
Yeah.
So she kind of gets her comeuppance a little bit. Everybody dies, including the guy that's holding the camera, because he doesn't want to fight, so she fucking kills him.
Yeah, so the idea is that she went to kill him as part of this cult ritual, but she videotaped it. So she's showing the videotape at the party, and everybody's just acting oh, this is awesome, this is so great to watch the video. And then I guess the cops go after them, raid the house. And so the family all have weapons hidden all over the house.
And that's the only story that connects to the Scott Derrickson thing, because it's the same cops, I think, right? The detectives that come in later.
Is it? I didn't catch that.
Yeah,
I think
so. Yeah. What's his name? Fucking
Freddy Rodriguez.
Freddy Rodriguez, yeah. is there with I forgot his name too. the guy from like Sinister, the guy that plays Eddie in
it, right. Yeah. So
James
then
James Runson. Yeah, I think they're the ones that that's where they get it the camera again, because James Ronson is the guy recording everything, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, oh man, these people died like the same way we saw in that video, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And I guess they begin to, you know, fight the cops or whatever, and they all die in various ways. And she plans on dying, but tries to kill herself and can't because she was sprayed with that water, which to me is kind of like, I guess that's the comeuppance revenge, is that she somehow these people that survived this know that she wants to die or is a fan of death or something, and somehow giving her the water and keeping her alive was going to be a curse,
I guess. I mean, she's just going to be locked up forever or be tested on.
Yeah. Not a fan of the end of this one. This one was a little too like eye-rolly for me personally, but
because it had a cool little, that first segment, like I said, the way it ended, I was like, that's pretty rad. I thought they were just going to be like zombie revenge killers or something, which would have been neat.
But yeah. I think the whole cop thing was weird. I thought they were going to, they themselves, knowing that they can't die, would be the ones to murder this, her entire family. That to me, that would have made more sense. But
and how were they able to track them back to that house?
Unexplained, as far as I can tell.
I guess when you live forever, it doesn't matter. You got all the time in the world. Even though they did it within a day.
Yeah, like literally 20 minutes later.
They're at the house. You know what? No. I remember now. Somebody was able to record the truck and get the license plate.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay. Yeah, all right. Fine.
Which is like super easy to do in 1985 and just drive around neighborhoods until you find that license plate.
Enhance. They just enhanced the video and got it perfectly unblurred out.
Control Alt E.
It was perfectly clear, the license plates. Alrighty. What was next? I think we could talk about God of Death. My thing with this one is the idea of something else besides the earthquake happening in 1985, which famously hit Mexico City and just ravaged, destroyed much of that city. And then kind of segmenting the idea that there's like a evil spirit or something underneath Mexico that we're basically like coming out of it. The thing I didn't like was that, like, what is the implication there? That, okay, so there's this group of survivors. They save the woman. They go, they try to get out, but they get further, deeper down in underground. And
you're right, yeah.
Yeah. And then we find out that it's some sort of like god or whatever evil entity.
I think it's supposed to be the one off the Mayan calendar, the main like sun god.
Okay.
And now he's like coming back because that's what initiated the earthquake, I think.
Yeah.
Is punishing the world or whatever.
Yeah, that's the only thing. It kind of feels like it's end of the world thing, but it doesn't like, none of what's happening connects to the rest of the movie. So it seems kind of like believable on its own. Like, where this event hasn't affected any of the other stories, or like there's no follow up on it. And I guess it doesn't necessarily need it. It's a standalone thing. I get it, but what are we saying that this sun god?
I think that's where if you've seen the first two, you would already get that vibe. Like, they're supposed to be standalone stories of happening all different parts of the world. That you wouldn't know about, because I think the idea is everybody's self-involved with their own thing.
Right.
I think it's the whole camcorder scenario. Like, people are like, oh, this is my story.
Right.
So, I think this is piggybacking off of the second one, where you realize it is the beginning of the end of the world in different parts, in like it's these things are all happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So we get like the alien dude, even though it's a documentary, like probably starting that part of the end of the world, and we're going to get zombies, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I don't know. I know it's not, it just raised a lot of questions, unanswered questions for me, like the ending, you know what I mean? And this one also, I think, the most egregious one in terms of like the actual like filming, why we're filming, like we had mentioned before. But aside from that, I thought it was, except for those negatives, I thought it was okay, you know?
I thought it was fun. It was very, I mean, of course, I'm going to appreciate anything that's like Mexican based. And I think my favorite part of it is, I'm assuming the lady at the beginning, who's like the lesbian host that keeps hitting on her makeup artist, is supposed to be a nod to Walter Mercado, I think.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I think so too. That's what I gathered too, yeah.
And then I like how Gigi put herself in the short as the reporter out in the field, and her dress is like painful to look at. It was really funny. Like I liked the bits of humor that were like added into this, because it's like a very graphic, horrific story.
No, like I think you're right about that. Yeah,
the other director, I guess, or whatever he was, the producer that survives, and he's trying to climb up because they're like, come on dude, we gotta go, and he keeps farting on the guy. I thought it was funny. Like it's like moments where it's like, oh, they really gotta go, like get out of there, but you know, one guy's gotta point out like, dude, can you please, I get it, but like don't fart in my face because we're climbing up this ladder.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought I liked it. But I do get how it feels very distant from the other ones. Well, you could argue the one, how do you say her name again, that directed Lucky? That one also feels kind of disassociated as well.
Yeah, yeah. It does feel the least self-contained out of all of them, you know, like they're all are kind of self-contained, none of them really overlap too much, but it definitely feels way distant. Even in its approach to how it's told the story or the segment, because it just feels like
that's true, because it's somebody recording in a black box and another camera set up in the corner. What was that segment called? Like, it's like something technology god.
I mean, yeah, it's an acronym. TKNOGD. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was gonna say the way that one ended, because I mean, you can kind of figure out immediately what's gonna happen. She accidentally summons, even though she's been rehearsing this over and over again. I think also there's something to be said about once you have an audience, things change.
Interesting. Yeah,
that she summons this technology god that she keeps claiming isn't real, and this thing starts to rip her apart in real time. But the way her, like, she's wearing a helmet, so she can see.
Daft Punk like helmet.
That's what it's a motorcycle helmet.
Yeah.
And when they take it off, it's like her eyeballs are still intact. So what I gathered from that, and I'm probably completely wrong, was that she was also technology. And that was a whole, just a performance piece.
Yeah. Interesting.
But it could also be like they just wanted her eyeballs to be intact or whatever, for whatever reason. It just didn't make any sense.
It's just supposed to be like a, oh God.
Yeah.
What is that? Yeah. Kind of moment, like shocking moment of the piece. Yeah, I also like, I mean, I just like the idea that, I like the way they played around with the idea that, like, when you're using this technology, it's inferred that it's like another dimension, the second, third dimension or whatever, which is perfect because it's like the setup to, they're in a dimension, they're basically kind of communicating with the other side, right? That's kind of like the idea. But it's kind of done through technology, and she kind of, you could say, like, summons this techno you know, spirit or whatever. God, yeah. And then she, you know, she dies. She basically gets murdered, which kind of makes sense. And I mean,
I did like that this like techno god or demon lord kind of looks like a Final Fantasy boss.
All right. Yeah. 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 That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. That one was like quick too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's not much you can like elaborate on that one. It's just like it's very fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my favorite of all of them, really. So,
then we get the most cinematic one.
The most cinematic one. Scott Derrickson can't help himself. He makes the most beautiful looking one out of VHS, quote unquote.
Yeah. Which I could be wrong about that one. Kind of trying to connect to Ambrosia. I feel like the detectives came in to a house where everybody got murdered. Whoa, no. What happens? There's a mangled person. There's a video that they show you quickly of somebody murdering this woman. Mm-hmm. And they had the footage before it happened.
Yes. Yeah. They're getting videotapes of murders before they're happening. Yeah. Or wait, wasn't the first tape the one from the past? It was of some woman. I was confused with that part. The very first one we see, the POV murder, yeah, wasn't that which, an old murder, but it was copycatted?
What I caught from it was that Freddy Rodriguez was saying, how is this possible? I think he was assuming, is this a copycat killer? Because this is exactly what happened on this tape. But you find out later that the tape is what actually happened to this lady, but before it happened.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. And and then they get, I think, one more tape or a couple more tapes, right? Until they
something like that, yeah.
Find out where the tapes are being mailed from, and then we're introduced to the
Gunther.
Gunther, yeah.
Played by Scott Derrickson's son.
Yeah, he plays a goth kid, yeah.
So he's recording all these things where he's finding them and he's just like sending them in.
They're all his dreams. They're all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they're recorded somehow on tape?
Yeah, he says that he has this, like you said previously, that he has this ability to dream stuff before it happens or something. Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, we're partly explaining it, but yeah, basically that he's. And he could see the tapes. He dreams them before they happen. The manifested tapes. He sends them out. And I guess they get one more, which they watch and try to figure out. You know.
And they leave Gunther in that room alone. They're like, you stay here, kid. And the camera guy. What was it? He goes by Bobby. It's James Ronson's character.
Mm-hmm.
Is the father of Gunther. And he's like, oh, you just stay here. And then they drive away. And of course, Gunther passes out in the room because in the grand scheme of things, that could have been like hours. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like it all took a long time. Yeah. And then Freddy Rodriguez, what stops him? He's like, before we go inside, why'd you do it, man? I was like okay.
Yeah.
And then, Bobby fucking shoots Freddy Rodriguez because Freddy Rodriguez is onto him.
Right.
And he still goes through with the murder, right? But then he goes back to
basically
TV corner. Yeah, I'm just kidding. That's the whole line. And he goes back to the police station to start murdering everybody?
Pretty much, yes.
While to kill that's his happening,
son. Right?
Basically. Yeah. While that's happening, Gunther wakes up and is panicking. So he looks into the video camera that was pointing at him. And he's like, oh, no, this can't be good. All right, this can't be. And dad's gonna kill him, and he says like, no, you're not gonna kill me, I know this ends already. And yeah, while the dude's massacring everybody, he gets shot in the head. Like it's like a classic psycho shot, right, where it's like the shallow, you can see kind of see him in the background, and then it's like a full focus thing.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and then That's it, right? There's nothing else happens.
That's it. Yeah. It wasn't. I'm gonna say it wasn't very exciting. I don't know what it was. Like, underwhelming too.
It's an interesting premise. I think it's like, well, like it's an interesting idea for this.
Yeah.
Series.
It's also, you can tell it's Scott Derrickson because it's very Black Phone.
Yeah, the whole playing with the, there's like powers, just like playing with the idea of time and murders. Actually kind of like sinister also-ish. Yeah. So it kind of plays out the same. Not entirely the same, excuse me, but like it kind of has the same kind of vibes of it. Like it's, you could tell it's directed by the same person. So.
Yeah.
Yep. And that was it. That was VHS 85.
Yeah, because then that's that wraparound of, in my opinion, the weakest story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's the movie.
That's it.
We did it.
We did. We all did it.
We all did it.
Yeah. Alrighty. Before we rate this, do you have any other thoughts before we rate it?
No, other than I think this is actually not a bad installment for the VHS series. They've had some really bad ones. Like the last three were pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, the 90s were terrible. So
yeah, which is true. So.
So leave the 90s in the 90s. We don't need the pants. We don't need the fashion. Just leave it all back there.
Just the windbreaker suits. That's all we need. We need the clown-inspired windbreaker suits.
Yeah. Yeah, alrighty. We should rate this. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
Don't do that. Just rate the movie. I'm going to give V/H/S/85 5 sexy spooky bones.
I'm going to give it 6. I think.
Okay.
I'm still. This is my first one, so I've never seen these movies.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
So yeah. I wasn't quite familiar with how any of, you know, I got the idea, but I wasn't quite sure, like, before watching it, how it worked, any of this worked, and I'm new to this type of,
I was actually going to give this a 6, and then the credits started playing, and this fucking god-awful 80s-inspired song started playing. I was like, no, it loses a point for me.
Yeah, like, let's laugh at the 80s, moment. So
not good.
I don't think it lied. It didn't lie with me either. I didn't much care for it. And I love me a cheesy 80s cornball song, but yeah, this one didn't hit.
I mean, it was just somebody explaining what happens in each of the segments.
Yeah, like, that's right.
I guess it's so corny.
Yeah. Yeah, there's things I like, things I didn't like, you know, so it was a 6. Not bad.
Cool.
All right. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening, and as always,
stay spooky.